The regular population is about 25,000 people. There are nearly 200 restaurants there. So they have the chef's competition that goes on for 2 or 3 days, and all of these guys and gals bring out their best shots at trying to wow the judges. I'm one of the judges. So it's really pretty cool.
It's open to the public. Go to these dinners and sample all these
foods.
You can just
go to the Ashland Culinary Festival and see what happened this year. And if you're have a hankering to get out of town next year in November, it's a great thing to get on your calendar. A
couple of weeks before Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of fun. And wines, Pinot Noir, is that what we're...
No. You know what's pretty interesting? Most of it is... yes, they do make Pinot Noir, but, you know, Pinot Noir is a cool weather grape. Mm-hmm. And a lot of Ashland gets pretty warm in the summertime. I mean, it's really beautiful in the summertime. So they're growing kind of warmer weather grapes, a bit of Cab, Malbec, you know, things of that, and all kinds of wild white varietals. I think they're still searching for, like, the Willamette Valley has Chardonnay, obviously, and Pinot Gris as their white wine things. Well, they're trying to find theirs. So they're, some people are experimenting with Verdicchio and all of these Italian grape varietals.
Anyone growing Viognier and things like that?
There's a little bit of Viognier grown, but not so much. Uh-huh. You know, they're really trying to. I think all of these regions are trying to find those things that really work for them with their microclimates.
Ashland Culinary Festival, put it on your calendar for next November. So on to Thanksgiving, 636-1350. If you have some feedback for us, what went especially well in your Thanksgiving table or the table that you visited over the holidays, things you tried, did you try something new that was a hit or a miss, share it with us this morning, 636-1350, or Steve at KSRO.com. So you did turkey this year, as you always do, and brought that to your family's
and
Thanksgiving.
Crab.
And crab.
And crab, of course.
But you didn't have to do anything.
No, we decided this year, and this was, you know, rather than make a complicated crab dish, we just had crab.
Just crab. With
pesto butter, you know, so made pesto and melted that into some butter, number one. And then the other was a kind of mustard aioli so that you could have your pick of what you wanted to dip them in. Yeah.
And you did one turkey?
One turkey, yes.
20-pounder?
20-pounder, plenty. Had 10 people, so 20 pounds is more than enough. Everybody got to take turkey
So
home.
Did you, number one, did you brine? Number two, did you spatchcock? Number three, did you roast in the oven or on the Weber grill?
So the answer is yes to one of those. I brined it for sure.
Dry?
No, wet brine. But did not spatchcock it, did it in the oven in the traditional way.
So you wet brine, that means you submerged the turkey in the maple syrup and salt brine?
Yeah.
In the cooler? Or?
No, I did it in the fridge. 20 pounds, it's not so big, you know, so you just put it in a kind of double heavy-duty trash bag, you know, and that.
Oh, sure.
And you just move it around occasionally so that all of it gets... brined at some point. So
and for a day, a full day?
Just about it. I did it for about a day and it was plenty.
With our conversation last week about how dry brining has superseded wet brining, and at least all the food writers passe.
They're full of it.
I know. I was going to say, the wet brining's out. It's passe. It's had its moment in the sun. Everyone's dry brining now. You went ahead and still did the wet brine.
Wet brine, because I like it. It's something I've always done, and either one works. I didn't mean to put down dry brining. It works, and the great thing about it is, of course, then you don't need a vessel to keep the wet brine in it and keep it around the turkey and all that stuff, so it just takes up less room.
But you were happy with how it turned out.
Yeah.
It was moist and the skin crisped beautifully, and you didn't bother with spatchcocking it or anything like that.
No.
And you did like 325, 350 the
whole
time?
I started it hotter at about 425 for 15, 20 minutes just to start the cooking to get the heat beginning to penetrate, and then turned it down to 325. And it was done, a 20-pounder was done in...
4 hours?
No, 3 hours.
Three? That fast?
Yeah.
And did you flip it?
Nope. Did it on a rack in a roasting pan.
Did you baste it?
No.
Okay.
Now, you can baste it, but I wanted a lot of crackly skin and all of that stuff, and so I wanted that skin to really dry out. So
after you dried out, do you then put oil on the skin?
Yes, just a little bit, and it seems to help. I don't know whether you'd have to or not. But
and black pepper, anything else?
Just
seasonings?
Salt and pepper.
Or you added salt even though you had brined
it? Just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. What it does, salt is a desiccant. You know, it helps to draw moisture out. And even though it was brined, it wasn't brined. If I had brined it for 3 days, I probably wouldn't have done that. But just a little bit, that salt then pulls the moisture out and helps to make the skin crisper. You know, so not a lot. Just, you know, hold your hand up high, 2 feet above your head, and just sprinkle some over.
Okay.
Like snow on Mount Fuji.
Gosh, what a beautiful visual. Yeah. So that's your turkey. My turkeys came out good. I did spatchcock the turkey, the 21-pounder. Whether I would spatchcock it again, I'm not really sure. Again, it's...
Why?
It was a lot of work, number one.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't see how these people say, just get some good kitchen shears. I can't. I don't have the arm strength, and I'm a pretty strong guy, to cut through the backbone of a 21-pound turkey. What I used was my garden
shears.
Garden shears. And that cut through.
Oh, yeah.
I have lots of leverage with those loppers.
You washed them first.
Oh, yes, I did. I did sterilize
I washed them after.
So I have large loppers, the ones that you would cut about an inch and a half tree limb.
Yeah, because they'll cut through that easily.
They cut through, John, within a minute, I'd cut through those.
Oh, that's
a great
idea.
My kitchen shears, I'm using both hands to try to crack this. Like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
It went through. And, of course, it gives me a lot to make my gravy.
Yeah.
Get those backs. So I had the backs, and I used the necks. I don't use the giblets. Maybe I shouldn't. I don't use the liver or the heart, any of that, because it was plenty. And I also cut off the wingtips, which I find burn in the Weber.
Yeah, awesome.
So I had plenty to roast with my carrots and my celery, and I used a few beets for my gravy. So I had lots of raw material. And then I used pressure to break that breastbone in the back and spatchcocked it both in the oven and on the Weber. I don't know. I guess it helped cook it a little quicker. I don't think it was really any better. Actually, unfortunately, I had too many things going on, and I kind of lost track of time. And
Were you drinking?
No, I wasn't. Not at that moment.
No, okay.
I kind of lost track of the one in the oven.
Yeah.
And
I
overcooked it.
Yeah.
It was, I think, 175 when I pulled out the breast, and it was a little dry.
Yeah.
The thighs and drumsticks were great.
Yeah.
But I lost track, and everyone thought it was really good, but I knew it was dry, but the skin was crisp.
You know, we've talked about that, and I think, you know, if you were going to, it's like, I agree with you. Sometimes everybody's looking for something new. It's like all the culinary magazines and newspapers and all that stuff. But this Thanksgiving, why don't you? It's like, just do it the way you've done it. But I think that idea of cooking the, before you start, cooking the breast separate from the legs and thighs is a great idea.
Yeah, I think next year that's what I'm going to do. And I may not spatchcock, because I have to tell you, I don't know why I did I've done this for 20 years on the Weber. I've grill smoked my turkey.
Yeah.
And this took almost as long, even with it spatchcocked with the backbone removed, as my regular way of putting this 12, 15-pound turkey on. It took about 2.5 hours or so to 3 hours. So maybe it was a half hour quicker. But I don't know. Didn't really make any difference.
Yeah.
So I don't know whether I think I may forego the spatchcocking next year.
Yeah.
Gravy turned out delicious. The stuffings were really great. There was a chestnut stuffing that was just terrific. Fresh chestnuts, were great. And then I did a new dessert, which I was really pleased about. It was a gluten-free crust key lime tart with a 10-inch removable tart pan. And I used Alice Medrich's recipe for her coconut crust, and it's from her new book. It's called Flavor Flowers, and it's turned out to be one of my fave books in my baking collection. And it's simple. It's coconut flour. It is dry, shredded, unsweetened coconut, one egg white, butter, melted butter, and a little bit of sugar, and about a quarter teaspoon of baking powder. And all of that is mushed together by hand.
And you just press it in?
Press it into the tart pan. It's really this simple, John. It's five ingredients.
And do you get a coconut flavor from
wonderful coconut.
Which would be delicious with
the
lime.
So I pre-baked that for 15 minutes. Didn't put any weights down until it browned around the edges and lightly browned. Took it out. Meanwhile, made my key lime curd, key lime juice. Used key lime juice, a lot of lime zest, some white sugar, four egg yolks, and a little shot of vanilla or so. Honestly, it was that simple, just by hand, together, and one can of sweetened condensed milk, of the 14 ounces.
So you did the authentic one.
The authentic one.
Yeah.
Took out my crust, put the filling in, back into the oven 15 to 18 minutes until it was not jiggling, just set. Out, cooled it, refrigerated it, and it was actually much better the second day. Mm. So here's a perfect Thanksgiving dessert that doesn't have to be last minute, that actually improved with aging on the third day. It was just as good as the second day. So if you're looking
for... I can't believe you had it around for 3 days. Didn't you eat it?
Well, I had it under lock and key in the refrigerator. And people did take it home, but it's very rich, of course. And what I did, before serving, I just zested a lot of very light, fluffy lime zest over the top. And, I'm sorry, I added a thin layer of whipped cream just for color. Yeah. So a very thin layer of whipped cream and then some orange zest. Took the tart out of the tart pan, served it, and it was a big hit. So people should really look at that for Alice's book.
Yeah.
Because it's one of the people are always looking for a foolproof gluten-free crust, and they're hard to find, believe me.
They are.
One using the coconut flour and coconut is
so foolproof. Can I tell you what I did for pies?
Yeah.
Because we had Thanksgiving at my daughter Emily's house, and she's been so busy and had two sick little boys and all of that stuff. I went to the Santa Rosa Junior College pie sale and got a pumpkin pie and a pecan pie, and they were delicious.
Well, this is great to hear that you did this, because Shelley Kaldunsky, folks that heard our show last Saturday, she's the pastry and dessert in charge of that department, was on last week talking about their pies.
Yeah.
We're going to be at 8 a.m. on Wednesday, pumpkin, pecan, and apple, those three pies. And you went and got a couple, and you vouched that they were terrific.
I was there at 7:30, and I think I was third in line. And by the time I left, it was out into the parking lot. But just remember that for future reference. And you can't order them ahead. It's first come, first serve. So
that's wonderful. I did another dessert, and I need to just tell folks about my experience with this. I did a crisp. Okay, so sometimes you need to leave, as we both know, have learned over the years, leave well enough alone. But I wanted to increase my crisp crunch factor, and I found the recipe from a cookbook author I really respect and like, and he suggested for the crispest, crustest, crispiest, you add cornmeal. Now, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, I can't, no, because it is going to be like eating sand.
Grainy. Yeah.
Okay, but he swore that blah, blah. So I went ahead and added this to my flour blend. And it was just like I thought it was going to be. It was like biting into a sand or gravel.
Yeah,
and I was so angry that I didn't trust that little voice that said, don't do this. Now, we both know this author, and I'll mention why he thinks this was a good idea. It's the same people that recommend grape nuts.
Yeah.
Like, add grape nuts. No, that's not a good idea. So I just stood stuck with my oats and my flour blend.
Yeah.
And I also toast some pecans ahead of time. I like walnuts and almonds, but those were in another dish that was on the table. But I toasted some pecans. I should have left well enough alone with my ice cold butter, a little bit of salt, and then a little bit of vanilla and a little bit of brown sugar, and done it. But I didn't. Yeah. And I had to give an explanation to my guests of, like, when you bite into this, it's not blah, blah. And everyone was very kind. And it was delicious. And you know what I did this year? I added pears. I've never added pears to my crisp before, but it added a velvet silkiness to the apple blend. And I did Braeburns in my Golden Delicious, my usual apple blend. But I wanted something a little velvety and silky. And my pears weren't ripe, so I put them in a paper bag the day before with a half-cut apple. That ethylene gas made them perfect from really firm to medium firm. Sliced, cored, and added those to the apples. It was a sensational crisp, except for the cornmeal. So don't make Steve's mistake, and a little vanilla ice cream. So that was Thanksgiving was good. Stuffing was good. Yeah. All the side dishes were good. My biscuits were good. And it was a success. Where's the time gone? We're going to talk for 8 minutes about Thanksgiving. Well, let's take a break and come back, and let's just chat about crab for a moment.
Oh, yeah.
Since the season, really, December 1st is the big open season.
It
opened the 15th, but then the 1st,
well,
I think everything opens.
You can be on the lookout. I'm writing a little piece for the Press Democrat,
which will
be out in a week or two.
We'll talk about that when we return. Steve Garner along with Chef John Ash in the KS Arto Kitchen.
Petaluma hears FM News Talk KSRO on Crystal Clear FM at 94.5.
Take a look in the mirror. What do you see? Sun damage? Facial veins? Fine lines and wrinkles? Dr. Walter Tom and his highly trained cosmetic laser nurse specialist can help.
The key to helping a patient is listening. What's really motivating them to come into our office?
Dr. Walter Tom of the Aesthetic Laser and Vein Center of Santa Rosa has offered laser skincare for over 15 years. With many different lasers to choose from, he'll develop a customized program just for you, minimizing downtime and producing real results. And with Dr. Tom, your skin consultation is free. Yes, you can look younger by Monday.
We now have lasers that create amazing improvements in the skin.
Dr. Walter Tom is a proud diplomat of the American Board of Cosmetic Surgery and a leader in introducing new technology to the North Bay. For your free consultation, call 542-8346 or visit the Aesthetic Laser and Vein Center at 70 Stony Point Road in Santa Rosa and online at laserandvein.com.
I'm Erin Brockovich. I've spent 27 years holding Pacific Gas and Electric accountable across this state. That's why I know you need a team that will always be on your side. After the 2017 wildfires, law firms flooded your communities looking to make a quick buck. But our team is different. We are committed to this fight because holding PG&E accountable and giving you the representation you deserve is the right thing to do. We're here to work with all of our clients to build their cases and make sure they're made whole for what they lost in these devastating fires. We're here for you, and we always will be. Learn more at pgelawsuit.com or call us today, 707-237-2445.
The next meetings are Thursday, the 29th at 5:30 p.m. and Saturday, December 1st at 10 a.m. at 70 Stony Point Road in Santa Rosa. For more, visit pgelawsuit.com. Noreen Evans of Watts Guerra LLP is the attorney responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Message and data rates may apply. Please do not text and drive.
Black Friday sale. What do those three magical words mean? For the first time ever, you can get up to $100 off the purple mattress and a free purple blanket. That's right. For 4 days only, save $100 on the world's most comfortable mattress and get a free limited edition purple blanket. But you might ask yourself, what's so great about the purple mattress? The purple mattress is unlike any other bed out there. It feels and supports your body differently than memory foam, pillow top, or springs. It uses a unique technology called the Smart Comfort Grid that dynamically cradles your pressure points and stays cool for the best sleep you've ever had. Try the purple mattress risk-free for 100 nights, and right now, get $100 off and a free blanket during our 4-day Black Friday sale. Don't miss this once-in-a-year event. To get this exclusive deal, text SECRET to 797979 right now. That's SECRET to 797979. To get this limited-time offer, text SECRET to 797979.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
In the KSRO kitchen, Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash. Hope your Thanksgiving was wonderful and everything came out beautifully. John, you mentioned before the break that you're writing another piece for the Press Democrat on crab.
Crab, yes, because crab season has opened. We can get crab now, but the big push comes December 1. You know, that's when everything goes crazy, and it just goes nuts up until Christmas time when people can enjoy it. So.
And how were the crabs you purchased for Thanksgiving?
The ones I got were really good. They were sweet and nice, not smaller mm-hmm. in size. And as I was saying to you off air, I'm not sure what that portends. Maybe the bigger ones come in later mm-hmm. or wherever they came from or something like that. But I have to ask a crab wholesaler.
I wonder, who knows, maybe the bigger ones come from British Columbia in that area up north. I don't know.
Yeah, who knows. Well, and part of it is there's still areas like south of Bodega Bay and stuff which aren't open yet, so maybe we'll get bigger ones.
That'll be exciting. The first crab recipe that you gave on the show.
What was that?
Was crab and vermouth.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that one?
Well, I'm going to put it in the piece. For
the crab and vermouth? Oh, my gosh. That was early 90s you had given that recipe.
Yeah.
Can you just basically tell us what that's about?
A lot of butter. vermouth.
White wine?
There's a little white wine and a little vermouth, because vermouth is, as you know, vermouth adds an herbal touch to it without having to add a lot of other herbals. In fact, it was Julia Child's favorite wine to add to the making of sauces and stuff like that. Rather than, I mean, she would specify white wine, but more often than not, she would specify dry white vermouth just because it had more stuff going on with it. So if you haven't done it, it's really a great thing.
And that crab vermouth, I think, is served over linguine.
Just put it in a bowl, and what you end up with is this wonderful crabby, buttery, winey broth that then you take lots of good bread and dip it in eat it. So it's really great.
Oh, I can't. And I think you used fish stock or something like that.
You can, and I'll talk about making fish stock. I mean, you can use, if you want to, if you've been saving your shrimp shells, which we have said a million times on here, you can take even just good canned chicken stock and simmer them with shrimp shells for a while and then strain them. And then now you have a wonderful fishy stock. Or if you've been really smart from previous crab things, after you've picked the crab, you can take those shells and do the same thing with them, roast them in the oven, and then add them to chicken stock and make a crab stock, which is really pretty delicious.
Do you freeze it? Do you put it in plastic bags?
And the thing that you can do is, because it can take up a lot of room in your freezer, is make it, strain it, and then put it back in the pot into a clean pot and do it on high heat and reduce it by half or more and really concentrate those flavors. And that way you'll always have it on hand.
That's a great idea. Yeah. And just the other recipe we want to mention are your crab cakes. Because you don't futz around with all these extraneous ingredients. And for years, you were the judge in the Mendocino Crab Cake Cook-Off, which we went up in Nolo Harbor.
For a few years,
is wonderful. And I like the simplicity of your crab cakes.
Well, that's what it should be. You know, it's not about putting all kinds of junk in there. And it's like, use breadcrumbs or panko or whatever you're going to use to bind them very judiciously, just enough so that they just hold together so that they don't fall apart when you try to saute them. And one of the things, it's funny, I did them at a cooking class not so long ago, and people insisted on taking their spatula. They would, because they're a little round, they make them into balls. I said, just put them in there and just let them brown. And they would take their spatula and press on the top of it. And of course, they would all fall apart. And I would say, would you stop that? Yeah, do not press it. You know, same thing with burgers. You don't press on a burger with a spatula.
Too. What is it? Because they think that's going to increase the crust.
I don't know what they think, but don't do it.
Well, that's as the cooking teacher of the year, you ask people, why are you doing that? Well, because I cook hamburgers this way. I press them down.
Yeah.
They shouldn't be doing
that. Well,
and
they think they should be cakes, so they think they should be a little flatter. I said, no. You're already using cooked crab, so all you're doing is just getting a nice little crust on it and keeping them moist. And
yours are so simple. I think you had one egg and a little parsley, a little mayonnaise.
Yeah.
I don't think you had any red or bell peppers, anything, or onions.
You can if you want to,
but
if
I don't
you
think
like
you
them.
Do.
But if you're going to, you know, cook them first, at least blanch them so they're not raw pepper tasting, and some panko breadcrumbs.
And I know you had some Worcestershire.
And a little bit of Worcestershire and some grated lemon zest.
And what about Tabasco? A little bit?
You can, if you want to.
I think
in the recipe I have, you can add, not Tabasco. So here, I'm going to say it. Don't buy Tabasco. Just stop it. Oh. There are so many great hot sauces on the market. Okay. Tabasco is just too vinegary. So if you have it in your fridge, do yourself a treat. Take it today and go throw it in your recycle can. and get something good. You know.
And so there's just a primer on making your crab cakes. And remember, it takes a number of crabs to get the meat required. My go-to is I need usually 2 to 3 pretty good-sized crabs to get 1 pound of crab meat. I use it like about 3 pounds of crab to get about 1 pound of meat.
Yeah.
Would you say that's about right?
And it's a little tedious to pick them, but that's when you watch football or do something like that while you're doing it. You can also buy picked crab meat. The downside of it is somebody's got to get paid for the labor to pick it, and it's like
35 a pound.
Yeah, 35 a pound or something like that. But if you're lazy and you made a lot of money on the stock market this year, you can do it.
We'll be back after this. It's Chef John Ash in the KSRO Kitchen.
Join the switch to crystal clear KSRO FM, 103.5 Santa Rosa, Windsor, 94.5 Petaluma. Hear the difference.
This month, win big at Graton Resort and Casino. Multiplier Wednesdays, get up to 7 times the points. On Thursdays, play in our anniversary slot tournaments. Up to 30,000 in prizes at each tournament. Get your collectible anniversary rewards card. New members sign up for Graton Rewards and get up to $500 in free play. Learn more at GratonResortCasino.com. Complete rules available at the Rewards Center.
If you or someone you know is struggling with addiction, please call this toll-free number right now. 800-390-9528. That's 800-390-9528. By calling your addiction team, you're taking the first steps to recovery. The help you need could be one call away. 800-390-9528. Make the free call now. 800-390-9528. Your addiction team is a third-party advertiser for various treatment centers and placement networks. Individual results will vary. Visit youraddictionteam.com/terms for more information.
Hey folks, this is George Adair from Bay Equity Home Loans. We're your local lender, but I want you to know we have cutting-edge technology available to you. I'm really excited to announce our Bay Equity Express closing. You don't have to go search the internet to find your home loan lender. We're right here in Santa Rosa, Petaluma, and Windsor. Bay Equity Home Loans offers many loan programs with amazing technology. At closing, you can digitally sign your loan documents. It saves time, saves frustration, and we get to the closing process so much faster. If you're buying in Sonoma County, the speed to close is one of the most important factors in getting your offer accepted. The reputation of Bay Equity locally is amongst the best. Visit us at BayEquityLoans.com or call 707-583-8100. Again, 707-583-8100. Bay Equity is your home for loans.
Equal housing lender subject to credit approval. NMLS ID 76988. The transaction will be made pursuant to the Department of Business Oversight California Finance Lender Law and or California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. NMLS ID 245370.
This is Michael Auger, president of Amatura Sonoma Media Group. For 50 years, the Pronzini family's been producing some of the most amazing holiday cheer from their Christmas tree farms headquartered in Sonoma County. They have served trees and wreaths to the local community and to the world. And now they're serving generous helpings of the greatest Christmas and holiday music of the season on SantaRadio.fm. Use your computer, iPad, or smartphone and go to SantaRadio.fm. Brought to you by the Pronzini Christmas Tree Farm family.
Listen each Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to noon for Garden Talk and the Good Food Hour.
Agriculture could be severely damaged in the U.S. by climate change. That's one of the findings of a federal report on climate change released Friday. More from ABC's Kana Whitworth.
The administration's own scientists now say significant immediate action is required to avoid substantial damages to the U.S. economy, environment, and human health.
The White House says the report's based on the most extreme scenarios, but the report also suggests the U.S. GDP could shrink by 10% by the end of the century. Right now, the number of people shopping online continues to grow. Adobe Analytics says Black Friday shoppers spent a record $6.2 billion online, and that so far on what's sometimes known as Small Business Saturday, consumers are on track to spend a record $3 billion online. Protests outside of a mall in Hoover, Alabama. It's after police fatally shot 21-year-old Amantic Bradford Thanksgiving night. They now say he was not the man who shot two teens. Brian Clark, ABC News.
Partly cloudy and dry for the weekend. Today it's 63 degrees, 58 on the coast. A few clouds tonight, low 39, 43 on the shores. A few clouds for Sunday at 65, 59 in Bodega Bay. Overcast for Monday at 64, 60 on the coastline. Depend on weather every 30 minutes on FM News Talk 103.5 and 94.5 KSRO.
Well, before we meet Sarah Burr and her wonderful new book, we just want to mention a couple things to do with all the turkey that's left over. You have some great ideas, John, in the book you wrote previous to Cooking Wild, Culinary Birds, the Ultimate Poultry Cookbook, which won, I think, was it a James Beard Award.
James Beard Award
for Best Single Subject. Yeah. What are a few things we should be thinking about with our leftover turkey?
Oh, I think there are all kinds of things. I mean, the most obvious thing is turkey soup, because you have that carcass that you can cook up and really get a nice stock from. So any you know, any kind of soup variation, I think, is really great. And it's a great place to use some of that leftover turkey, chop it up and throw it in there along with good vegetables and stuff. And a recipe that's in there, it's an old war horse recipe that I really love, is turkey tetrazzini, which was named after the famous, you of course know her, operatic star, Luisa Tetrazzini, who apparently was quite a large woman and loved to eat and all of that stuff, but especially loved things that had cream and eggs and all of that kind of stuff in it. So it's kind of a casserole kind of deal, very rich one. And she is remembered for the quote, "I must eat or else my face sag."
So that recipe,
yeah,
have.
Yeah.
And then you have the wonderful recipe for the hot brown, which created at the Brown Hotel in Louisville, Kentucky, by Chef Schmidt. You have the original recipe.
Yes, I got that.
Yeah. And that's turkey and bacon with a kind of a Mornay sauce. I think you use Romano cheese in your recipe.
Yeah,
melted.
Yeah, and it's an open face hot sandwich that it's still they still serve it there.
They do.
Yeah.
And what we did last night with our leftovers is our famous go-to leftover is something called the Fields Special. Mm. And this was a sandwich popularized at Marshall Fields department stores 75 years ago. And we still make it. We have rye bread on the bottom, not toasted, a little bit of butter on that rye bread, followed by Swiss cheese. Okay, following me so mm-hmm. far? Mm-hmm. And then a slice of tomato, and then several strips of bacon. Okay, then we have our turkey breast, good old iceberg lettuce, and then Thousand Island dressing with a spear of black Mission olives
right on the top.
On the top with some pickles on the side. It's, to me, the ultimate open face sandwich. And having said that, let's say hello to Sarah Burr. What do you say? Does that sound like a good idea?
Yeah.
Hello, Sarah Burr.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
We're doing fine, thank you. Your book is The Fruit Forager's Companion, Ferments, Desserts, Main Dishes, and More from Your Neighborhood and Beyond. We were so excited to get this book and talk to you about it. But before we do any of that, happy Thanksgiving.
You too. I just love hearing all your turkey talk. It's inspiring me.
We first experienced the magic of Sarah when you were writing for our local Bohemian newspaper many years ago. What years did that encompass?
This is embarrassing. It's all a blur. I can say it was the early 2000s, but I'd have to get out my resume. I would say probably around 2002 to 2004. Although I continued writing columns for them, even after I'd moved out of the area. I just can't get Sonoma County out of my system, which is a good thing.
Well, you were one of our favorite writers back then. We loved reading your columns. And when I saw that you had this new book out, I said to myself, gosh, John, we can just call Sarah and have her come by the station and sit in with us. And lo and behold, your publicist tells me, well, no, she doesn't live there. She lives back in Ohio. She moved back to the family farmstead, is that correct?
I moved back to where my family lives, yes, although we don't have a farmstead, which is exactly how I got into foraging. I'm not very good at growing things, so I have to look elsewhere.
And where do you live in Ohio? What part?
I live in southeast Ohio in a town called Marietta. It's right across the river from West Virginia, and it happens to be the first permanent settlement in the Northwest Territory. It was settled in 1788.
Oh, my gosh, what a historically important place. And what are they famous for?
What are we famous for? besides what I just said, it's a lovely little town. It's on the Ohio River, and it's full of historic buildings. It's just got a lot of character. And, of course, I had said I'd never move back there, and, you know, here I am. But I'm really happy here, and there's, like I said, there's a lot of good foraging to be done. That's not what brought me here, but it's maybe what kept me here.
You know, the book, because the book is about foraging everywhere, not growing anything, because as you have admitted, you're not a great farmer, but finding things. And you made both Steve and I said that there were wonderful kind of comments made in the book, and one of them in the in the very beginning, you made the statement, foraging has made you less egocentric. What did you mean by that?
I spend a lot of time as a writer. I'm a chef and a writer, and I spend a lot of time by myself writing. And even in recent years, if you look at your social media feed, everything's tailored to appeal to you. So we spend all of our days in our own heads, surrounded by things that we are supposed to be liking and are supposed to appeal to us. And then when you go out into the world, it's so refreshing because you realize that nature just continues without you. Plants don't care what you think. They don't care about being liked. They are just plants. And that's I just love being pushed out of my brain that way. It's very refreshing, and I think it just helps me engage with other people and with my surroundings so much better.
That's great. There was a statement shortly after that, which I just loved, which I think can encourage even for those people who aren't foragers now to go give it a try. You said foraging is a daily act of civil disobedience. It's like flipping the bird at the industrialized food system.
Yes, you know, we're so used to the concept of you go to the store and you buy your food. And even as somebody who knows where food comes from, ostensibly, we used to have to make the food happen ourselves. And when you're not doing the work to make the food happen, you don't appreciate it as much. Food takes so much work. Farming takes a lot of work. And even, you know, foraging is a lot of work. It's like my yoga class. So that's what I do. I'm happy to do it. But if I were going to forage exclusively, I would just die. It's a lot of time. It's a lot of work. And you might not be able to completely sustain yourself by foraging, but you can eat very well and contribute to your diet and your wellness, and also to your culinary delight. As a chef, that's what I love about foraging too, is the new flavors and textures and experiences I have through foraging. And you don't have to do that at the store. There are plenty of ingredients that are growing out there, and it doesn't mean you have to stock your pantry with those exclusively. There, you can start a little bit at a time and even just stay with that. Foraging is for anybody who wants to try it. You don't have to be a mountain man. You don't have to be a botanist. It's really quite accessible.
Yeah. So the thing that you point out in the book also in with this foraging, this, so much of it is in places that you already go to. And it forces you to take a different look, a different develop a different perception about the place that you live in and the things that grow there. Another quote that I really love of yours, you said, because this book is about fruit specifically, not about other kinds of weeds and stuff like that, but you said fruit is the currency of memory.
Yes, I think so many people have something that they grew up with that maybe isn't part of their lives anymore. So, when I talk to people about fruit, whether they know that this is a thing I do or not, or whether they know about the book or not, oftentimes there is a thing that they'll, mulberries, for instance. So if somebody grew up and there was a mulberry tree nearby, they have this childhood memory of eating mulberries, and even if they haven't done that for 50 years, mulberries are special to them because of that. I suppose you could grow up in Sonoma County and have a childhood memory of persimmons, maybe not fond, but there's something that makes an imprint in your consciousness and stays there, and I think that's so important culturally, but also just as your own identity. Even if the fruit is no longer something that's part of your daily life, it's still there.
I love all the beautiful, noble, enlightened sentiments, but there's also the other side of Sarah Burr, and that is, why does she forage? I started foraging because I'm nosy and cheap.
Yes, and in fact, some of my earlier foraging outings that weren't just picking blueberries or blackberries on a camping trip, it's when I lived in Sonoma County, and for a while I didn't have a car, so I would walk from my home to the library downtown in Santa Rosa where I worked and go past people's houses. And because I'm nosy, I'm always checking out other people's yards. And, you know, you would go past all these different ornamental fruit trees, and sometimes also coworkers of mine would bring sackfuls of Meyer lemons or persimmons to the break room at the library to try to disburden themselves of them. And through that sort of secondhand foraging, and also sometimes just, you know, snatching a fig here and there, that's really how I noticed how many things grow there in Sonoma County that I wasn't used to, having grown up in Ohio. Just this idea that citrus can grow on a tree in a yard. It still blows my mind.
Did you use any foraged ingredients in your Thanksgiving meal, Sarah?
I did, and it's not the obvious way. So stick with me here. When I do my turkey, I break it all down into parts, and then I roast the carcass and the skin and make it into stock. And then I use that fat for making the gravy. All right, that's not foraging, but that's my utilization of ingredients. Then I take the quarters, the legs and the drumsticks, as well as the neck and the gizzards, and I cure them like you would cure duck confit. So I put a ton of salt on there, as well as sprigs of thyme, garlic cloves, and traditionally with confit, you would use crushed juniper berries. But what I use instead are spice bush berries. And spice bush is a flowering shrub that grows in the eastern United States. And it's got a little red oval berry. And you gather those in the late summer and early fall. And this year was bonkers for spice bush. Mm-hmm. So you can use those. You don't just eat those berries out of hand. They're very piney and sharp, kind of like juniper, but they have a little bit more of a citrus thing going on. And you can just let them sit out and dry. And once they dry, they shrivel up and they're brown and they're shelf-stable. And you can use them like a spice. So instead of using the juniper, I used dried, crushed spice bush berries. But you can also forage for your own juniper berries. So foraging isn't necessarily dragging home bushels of things. It can be a handful of something, and you still have the experience of getting it. It's not necessarily the quantity of ingredients you bring home. Anyway, that's my favorite way to do the turkey, and it's excellent.
Marvelous. We'll take a break at that point. We'll be back with Sarah Birr. Her last name is spelled B-I-R. Her new book is called The Fruit Forager's Companion, Ferments, Desserts, Main Dishes, and More from Your Neighborhood and Beyond. Steve Garner and Chef John Ash in the Chaos Arto Kitchen, celebrating 31 years this year on the air.
Traffic on the fives, weather six times an hour. Sonoma County's morning news with Pat Kerrigan on FM News Talk, KSRO.
Dine out and give back at Food for Thought's Dining Out for Life event on Thursday, November 29th. Over 65 local restaurants are supporting Food for Thought by donating 25 to 50% of your bill to help feed people living with HIV and other serious illnesses. So invite your friends, family, and coworkers to join you at the best restaurants in Sonoma County. Dine out and give back on Thursday, November 29th at Food for Thought's Dining Out for Life. Visit fftfoodbank.org for more info.
You know, there's no denying it's unhealthy. It makes you cough and hurts your lungs. Burning wood in your fireplace pollutes the air outside and inside your home. Safeguard your family's health this winter. If your home is smoking, it's time to quit. It's your air. Protect it. To learn more, visit sparetheair.org.
Happy homeowners say,
I love my home.
Yet sometimes that's followed by,
but I hate my kitchen.
Fortunately, that can change. Hudson Street Design can help you love every room in your home. Our design experts work with top manufacturers for cabinets, plumbing fixtures, even windows and window coverings that will offer the perfect solution for your kitchen or bathroom.
Oh, did you say bathroom?
Yes. Let us inspire your next project. Start now for 2019 at hudsonstreetdesign.com, the North Bay's premier showroom.
At E.R. Sawyer Jewelers, we know your beloved jewelry is much more than the sum of its parts. Your grandmother's bracelet, your grandfather's pocket watch, your mother's wedding ring. It's your heart. It's your story. E.R. Sawyer Jewelers has been here for 139 years, and their experts are waiting to help you restore, recreate, or start anew with your jewelry story. Visit the knowledgeable team and explore the possibilities. E.R. Sawyer Jewelers, the I Love You store since 1879, downtown Santa Rosa and Main Street, St. Helena.
Enjoy the last of the summer vegetables and fruits at the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market. The market is popping with the colors of fresh greens, mushrooms, carrots, potatoes, turnips, Brussels sprouts, and winter squash, along with seasonal pomegranates, persimmons, apples, walnuts, almonds, and even fresh chestnuts. Meet local ranchers offering a variety of quality meats, beef, pork, and lamb. Salmon Creek Ranch is taking orders for your Thanksgiving or Christmas goose. There's fresh fish and crab from Anna's Seafood. Everything you need to create the freshest Thanksgiving feast is at the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market. Check out the creations of the many talented artisans for holiday gift giving. Open year-round Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 till 1 p.m. at Luther Burbank Center for the Arts. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's always fresh, local, and fun.
The Rohnert Park Community Services Department presents the 39th Annual Holiday Arts and Crafts Fair, November 23rd and 24th, from 10 till 4 p.m. at the Rohnert Park Community Center, corner of Snyder and Expressway.
See local arts and crafts artisans with unique holiday ideas for giving and displaying. Distinctive jewelry, yard art, wine barrel creations, lotions, scarves and hats, even gift food items. There'll be roaming entertainment and food both days of the fair. Returning this year is Little Elf's Workshop. Children can visit the workshop to write a letter to Santa and drop in Santa's mailbox before they leave.
Don't miss this perfect opportunity to shop locally from a variety of talented artists and craftsfolk from all around the Bay Area. Be sure to visit the annual Holiday Pottery and Fused Glass Sale offering one-of-a-kind pieces.
That's the 39th Annual Holiday Arts and Crafts Fair, Friday and Saturday, November 23rd and 24th, from 10 till 4, both days at the Rohnert Park Community Center on Snyder Lane. Don't miss the best craft fair in Sonoma County, period.
Steve Garner and Chef John Ash in the KS Arnold Kitchen talking with Sarah Burr. Her new book is called The Fruit Forager's Companion. Her last name is spelled B-I-R. I mean, everything you'd ever want to know from, I guess, from crab apples to sumac is in this particular book.
Well, and plus things that I've never heard of. You must have had to do a lot of research in local communities and things like that. And would you talk about pawpaw, which is not something that people in the West know anything about, but I guess if you're from that part of the world, the part of the world you live in now, in the South and in the Middle Eastern part of the United States.
And you wrote in the book that when you first began foraging, it was probably the first fruit you really write about, and you wrote that the pawpaw found me, not vice versa.
It's true. So when we're talking about pawpaws, it's spelled P-A-W-P-A-W, so it's all one word, and it's the largest fruit native to North America. I grew up with a pawpaw tree in the woods in my backyard, but I had no idea this fruit even existed. It's like the Sasquatch of fruits, partially because people just stopped, not necessarily stopped eating them, but they're very difficult to transport, and they don't keep well. And they're just kind of like a fruit of the woods. So I hadn't ever encountered one. Also, that pawpaw tree in the woods in my backyard never bore fruit. They can reproduce. The trees can reproduce by sending out shoots. So the fruit is actually secondary to their reproduction, and that's why they're sort of fussy about fruiting. But eventually, when I moved back, I had heard about the existence of these things, and I almost questioned their existence. But I was out hiking one day, and it was in the late summer, which is when the pawpaws are ripe here in Ohio, and one was in the middle of the trail, just splayed open, and it's got this saffron-colored flesh. The exterior skin is this really unexceptional blotchy green color. It really blends in with the canopy of the woods up above, so it's hard to spot on the tree. But once it falls, it just bursts open. They're soft and squishy, and they've got these gorgeous huge black seeds, and I thought, what on earth is this? And I kind of figured out backward style that it was a pawpaw, and when I found one that hadn't been stepped on, I tasted it, and I was just enchanted. It's tropical, just intensely perfumed. It's got kind of a mango banana thing going on with some citrus notes, and it's definitely like nothing you would find in Ohio. It's like it had been beamed in from outer space. But they grow all the way from the southern parts of Canada down to the northern parts of Florida, and as far west as the Mississippi. So out in the woods, they're an understory tree. That's where you'll find pawpaws growing. And in California, people do cultivate them, but they are not inclined to thrive there. So you have to be really love challenges to grow those pawpaw trees.
With Christmas on the way, there's lots of great recipes mm-hmm. in this book, Sarah. Are you going to be making kolache?
I do that every year. Well, you know, in theory, I do that every year. One of the things I do is develop recipes. That's part of my income. So it depends how much work I have developing recipes. Afterwards, I'll make recipes for fun. But I do love making the kolache, and those are buttery little cookies that you put a dab of a fruit filling in, and then you wrap them up almost like a baby in a bunting, and they're like little pies. Oh, they're heavenly.
We're down to the last minute or so, but we want to give one of our listeners a chance to win a copy of your book, Sarah. Would you give us your favorite number today between 1 and 12?
I'm going to say 8.
Caller number 8 at 636-1350 will win this book, The Fruit Forager's Companion, Ferments, Desserts, Main Dishes, and More from Your Neighborhood and Beyond by Sarah Burr, who was a former resident of Sonoma County. And it's filled with just life and vitality and great humor and terrific information. So many fruits that both John and I knew very little about. I hadn't heard of
it. Or even heard of, yeah, which is great. And the other part of the book is you have a great resource section.
Yeah.
So if people want to find out more about these things, you tell them where to go.
Tell them
indeed,
where to go.
Indeed, yes.
Thank you so much. Do you ever get back to California?
Well, it's been on my list for a long time, and now I have even more reasons.
Well, whenever you do, call us. We'd love to have you join us live in the kitchen.
Oh, my goodness. This has been so delightful. John and Steve, thank you. I'm just over the moon talking to you.
Our pleasure, Sarah. Have a wonderful holiday.
You too.
Take
bye-bye.
Care. Sarah Burr, B-I-R, The Fruit Forager's Companion, caller number 12, will win a copy of this just terrific new book. Well, next week, John, we're on the verge of Hanukkah, and that means latke talk.
Uh-oh.
Plus, we will be tasting the country's only Hanukkah beer, developed specifically for Hanukkah with the brewer. How about that for a show?
Yeah, I can't even imagine what that is.
We'll find out okay. Next Saturday. Thanks for listening. Clark Wolf in the kitchen. He's at the table following the news. And then great wine talk with Jeff Davis. All that and more on KSR. Thanks for joining us. Gwen Kilcher and I back with Garden Talk and John and I in the kitchen next Saturday. This is KSRO.
I'm Stephen Curry.
I'm Steve Kerr. I'm